that you face another day. It leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Get to people. Who you gonna turn to? Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Get to people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
tell people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness can never get used to. Get to people. What are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Get to people.
Who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people. You better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
like
at.
Living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe.
Lost in your dream.
Get to people.
Stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, y'all.
Talking to my people.
Yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them in their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation through the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope all is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, you did it anyway. Well, at least you better had done it anyway. quit procrastinating. It's one of our big faults, some people say. But it's another Monday, and it's good to be here. And I'm glad that you're there listening, wherever you're listening from. Of course, you can listen in various ways. You can go on TuneIn. You can listen on your mobile devices, your cell phone, tablets. Go to TuneIn, and then once you got TuneIn, put in the search. And you should tell your friends to do the same thing. Tell them to do the same thing. Put in the search, Time for an Awakening. And every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'll be right here from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Also, too, you can go online, blacktalkradionetwork.com and timeforanawakening.com to listen to the program. Or you can just call 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And you can join the conversation, add to it, or just speak your mind, or give us your African perspective, okay? Give us your African perspective. Since we had some good conversation this past Friday, didn't get a chance to fully go over that article that I was reading to you on the post-traumatic captivity syndrome. let me give a rundown, and then I'm going to go into some reasons why I use the words that I use. Let me give a rundown. Once again, our number here is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And, of course, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, on Mondays today, Monday, yes, and we should be geared up to listen to Buy Black 365. Buy Black 365 should be on this evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC. I listened to her program this past Sunday. Had a really good program, Sister POC is hype. I love it. Revive, Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Us Lifting Us, ULU. I'm very excited pretty soon. We thought it would be today that we would be having the what is called a soft opening of our Cafe ULU, the Coffee and Internet Cafe. Here in Atlanta on Sylvan Road and Georgia Highway 166, very easy to get to. All roads lead to Cafe ULU, plenty of parking. And the soft opening where we invite family members and friends to come to the cafe, and then the grand opening sometime next month. We'll see.
but I'm excited. And of course, Ulu is every Thursday with Brother DJ, Baba Akima, Baba Kambizi, Baba Thurman, Sister Nanana, Sister Shea, and all the others and myself. And I'll be the host this Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., us, lifting us. And on Friday, if it's Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, oh, it's time for an awakening. It is time for an awakening, and boy, do they bring it. I love them, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. Saturdays, SST, that's Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Brother Troy Wilmore on Saturdays. Saturday afternoon, later afternoon, from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sundays, Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's once again, it's time for an awakening. Outstanding show last night. His host, Brother Elliot. Unfortunately, Brother Richard was not in attendance, had family business, but he always brings a good perspective, and those two are good together. Irritated Genie. The Irritated Genie was on. And he mentioned the conference that's going to be held here in April, April 14th, Saturday, April 14th, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Brother Oshua Kwesi will be giving his outstanding history lessons on ancient Kemetic history. And Baba Baruti, Mawalimu Baruti, who is a good friend, he will be doing his presentations, and Irritated Genie on survival. And, you know, Baba Baruti has a school here in Atlanta, outstanding educator. And, of course, I always read his piece on sovereignty, and because that's what we talk about here on this program, independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what we talk about on this program. In fact, as I say, it's the only discussion we need to have. Everything else is Putin and pontificating, okay? Everything else is really irrelevant, because the discussion that we need to have is about the lives of our people, not just some individuals, not just a few folks who are happy and content with finding their comfortable niche here in European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And they act as the buffer, because that's what they talked about last night, the role of the mulatto. In fact, Dr. John Henry Clark, before his death, he talked about that. He talked about, he's going to write a book on that, the role of the mulatto in the suppression of African people. And he talked about that and other things that were going on in terms of what happens with us, and how the Negropeans or the Negroocracy maintains its position while keeping the majority of us in a subservient position. They act as the buffer. But one of the things that I didn't get a chance to finish on Friday was talking about the African mind.
This call is being recorded.
Talking about the African mind. And that's what we need to do. We need to talk about the African mind. You know, well, we have a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say. It's always good to have callers this early. And good morning, 627. Good morning, 627.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie.
Hey, man, what's up, Ralph? How are you today, brother?
I'm fine, Brother Oshie. I called you up because I need to sit on somebody's sofa. I need some help from something I've been listening to and seeing on social media and a whole bunch of other stuff, man. First thing first, I thought that was an excellent program last night.
Oh, I did too.
The conversation was very relevant to Black Talk, let me make sure I'm saying this correctly. Black Talk Radio. And in my opinion, Brother Oshie, you know, it's funny how history repeats itself, because you know, you could see certain spirits that our people had to go through when they were trying to escape off the plantation. When people say that, when it bothers certain people, a conversation saying that we should return back to our motherland to see what's going on there, and it bothers you. Or when we talk about sovereignty, or when we talk about history, that, or we keep repeating the same mistakes, and that bothers people, then you got to question that person who is bothering. Yeah. And say, like, wait a minute, because they say this, Brother Oshie. They say, if you take a stone and there's a herd of pigs over there, and you throw the stone, the one it hits and squeals, you know what I mean? And Brother Oshie, and I'm trying to be respectful in my anger right now, because I have actually donated to this platform. And I, you know, when you try to hush black people up and being black people, I got an issue with that, man. But I'm trying to be respectful to another brother that me and him, we go a long way back. So I'm trying to be very respectful, because I was about to write some emails and I was about to do some things until the brother said, no, let him talk to this person first.
Sure.
But, you know, so that's why I'm holding my contempt. You know what I mean? Because I thought that was an excellent program.
No, it was. I agree. I pretty much listened to the whole program. In fact, I even called in. I was spurred to call in as well, you know, to just lend a little more information in terms of what the irritated genie had to say, what Brother Elliot had to say, and many of the callers had to say. So, yeah. Very informative, and I'm looking forward. Although the conference is here in Atlanta, but I would hope that a number of people would come to Atlanta for this particular conference at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Because what I was saying, Brother Ralph, is that here it is. Next year will be 400 years that we have been here, and we really need to take a look and an assessment of our situation collectively. I ain't talking about a few Negroes and all the so-called progress that some of these Negroes say that we have made. Look how far we've come, this, that, and the other. I'm talking about a total assessment of African people mentally, physically.
As a whole.
As a whole.
As a whole.
As a whole, yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Forget the individualism.
Exactly.
As a whole.
As a whole. What is that situation? Right. What does it really look like? How does it bode for us? What is our condition? What is our prospects? What is our future? After looking at 400 years and now saying that for this point going forward, this is the direction that we need to take, you see? And so I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about that conference coming up. But more importantly, excited about the future for us as a people, because even though I come on this radio program and I say some things that don't seem to be very positive in terms of what's happening with us, but I'm an optimistic person. I believe that we will overcome all of this bull that has afflicted us and come together to be the people that we once and should be. I believe that controlling our own land, our own resources, you know, being independent, self-determining, liberated and sovereign. I believe that, you know, and this is my portion of trying to make that happen. Go ahead, Brother Ralph.
Right. Now, the thing about it, Brother Oshie, you know, like just what they were discussing, a big part of us becoming that people and becoming whole is to get rid of the collaborators and traitors.
Yes.
Why would that bother anybody?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why would that bother anybody?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, sometimes folks let you know exactly where they come from, especially when I see a constant attack of not the oppressor, but a constant attack of against people who speak against the oppressor. Mm. So, you know, and some people need to really take a look at that. You know, some people really need to, you know. So I just had to call in this morning to respect to a friend of mine. I'm not going to go any further, but I think I'm not even going to write an email. I wanted to write an email.
Okay.
And I wanted to take my disgust to this person, but I was told not to.
Okay.
You know, so I'm going to respect those wishes, but I'm going to take it to you because, like I said, I need to sit on somebody's sofa this year. that really disturbed me, brother.
Yeah.
Ocean.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I hear you.
I'm not one of those radical guys that run. I know, but I want what's best for our folks.
Yes, you do.
I want our folks to get real information.
Yeah.
I want our folks to obtain life, because right now we're only surviving.
Right.
We need real life, brother. We need freedom.
That's right.
And that's what and there's nothing wrong with me wanting that for our people.
No. So, that's what we should want. That's what we should want for our people, man. You know? The ability to,
like you said.
Yeah.
like you said, if you're not discussing sovereignty, what are you doing?
Exactly. Everything else is moot. If you're not talking about being independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign, everything else is frivolous.
Right.
It's just jaw-jagging. It's just intellectually masturbating, if you want to use all those other terms. Because the bottom line for us, Brother Ralph, as you know, is that our future with these folks in this situation is so uncertain. And they have consistently shown us that everything that they do has been designed for them in mind and at our detriment. In fact, reality is we are dying and they are killing us.
Yep.
You know, and they are killing us, even though the argument could be, well, y'all doing a lot of black on black crime. Y'all killing yourselves. Understand this. And this is what I'm talking. This is what I'm going to talk about today in terms of what is wrong with the African mind and why we do and think and say the things that we say and do, because we don't understand it. We don't understand what is the root of the problem that we experience.
You know,
we don't understand it. And so that would be the discussion pretty much today.
All right, Brother Oshie. Well, I'm going to let you go, brother. But I'm trying to behave. So I'm going to call you and vent my frustrations on what I've heard. It's been an ongoing thing almost like the last month.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I'm just going to like end on that ticket. I know you probably have other callers, man, and happy to see you back, brother.
Well, thank
you,
brother.
So I just want to say enjoy the rest of your day, my brother.
All right, my brother. Thank you. Thank you. Peace to you.
Peace, man.
We have another caller. We're going to take this caller as well. 414. Good morning, caller.
Brother Oshie.
Hey. Russ.
You thought I forgot about you, didn't you?
Man, you better not, man. How you doing, Brother LaRue?
I'm doing real good, man. Good. I'm doing real good. I was listening to the brother, man, before you. And we use the word freedom. And I think that we have not really analyzed that concept as much as we should have or could have. Well, we're still, for us, it's like Brave New World. We're in a situation that, as a people, we have never been in before. And so, but I think it's important for us to understand what the concept of freedom means. That means the freedom to be yourself, according to what your true nature is. And our nature, our true nature is African. And I was watching some stuff on TV, and they talking about we all the same under the skin, we all the same this and that. But even though we are all human beings, there are different kinds of human beings, just like there are different kinds of birds, different kinds of insects, etc. But each one has to be true to its nature according to itself. And that's what we need to look, we need to examine that. What do we mean by freedom? And so for us to be free, we would have to at least begin to think like Africans. to understand African culture and how it works. Even though we are locked up in European language and European culture, I think that we could still think like Africans in that context. And so, that's kind of what pretty much what I wanted to say right now.
Okay,
well, just let you know, I might call back a little bit later.
Yeah, no, do that, because I'm going to throw some stuff out here, and I want some responses. I want everybody to, you know, who can call or have the opportunity to call or whatever, to 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and join this conversation. So, Brother Lou, please give me a call. But let me know what you think.
But let me say this.
Sure.
Some people think that because they're doing what they feel like they want to do, that they are free.
Yes.
But
yes, you're right.
But being free means being true to your nature, what God created us to be. And I think that we are still in slavery. And we don't understand that. So in slavery, because slavery has manipulated us in such a way mentally that we think that we're doing, because we're doing what we want to do, what we feel like doing, we think that we are free. But I think that what's happening is that we are conforming to the slavery, because now that's kind of like what we want to do. Man, I was watching The Wire. I haven't seen it before, but I'm seeing how we act in The Wire, and it's like black people killing black people, and we think that we're doing what we want to do. When black people kill black people or act in a way that does not benefit us, that's not freedom.
No, it's not.
Right.
No, it's not.
So,
and what we're doing is what was designed for us to do by those who have manipulated and undermined us, the oppressor, the Caucasian, the cracker, whatever words you want to use. You know, we're doing his bidding. That's what happens.
Exactly. So, anyway.
All right, brother.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I'm listening.
Always, Lulu.
I have not forsaken you.
I appreciate it, brother. Hang on in there with us. Okay. All right, brother.
Okay.
Peace.
All right, peace.
We're going to talk. I guess I didn't get a chance to because of the great conversation we had this past Friday with some of our good callers, Brother Joe and Brother Jay and Brother Marcus and a few others who called on Friday, engaging in conversation. I wanted to finish up talking about, and remember, on this program, I use words because somebody said, you know, words have meaning. You know, should use the proper words in the proper context, because words form images. And so, therefore, I don't use the word slave on this program. When I see the word slave, I automatically put in captive or captured or captor, because we were not slaves. My brother LaRue Ned just went off, and of course his book is Why We Should Not Call Our Ancestors Slaves. Why We Should Not Call Our Ancestors Slaves. And of course, if you listen at the beginning of the program and during the libation portion, you know, because I've been saying that for, and I will continue to say that to the day I die, we were not slaves, we were captives. Even though in the libation I say, what does a slave want to do to get free? But it's supposed to be, what does a captive want to do but get free? Hey, I'll correct that piece in the very near future. But we were not slaves. Also, too, I don't use race, because there's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. And what makes us different as human beings is the ability to adapt to environments. And, of course, when you adapt to an environment, you change your physiological makeup. You mutate. You know, there's some mutation happening. Okay, so it's not race. The European devised the concept. They came up with the concept of race, and I can point to two individuals, Carol Linnaeus and Johann Blumenbach. Look them up and look at the year that they presented this. You know, so there's cultures. It's European culture, which they've imposed upon the world, which they have imposed upon us, and there's African culture. African culture is more holistic. Oh, just get Dr. Shake onto the job. Job said it is a two-cradle theory of human development. There's a northern cradle, the European, and there's a southern cradle. Get Job. I'm going to tell you right now what he said. I got it right here in my hand. Dr. Shake onto the job said in that two-cradle theory of the human development, the Caucasians, the Eurasians, they were hunting, nomadic, rovers, very hardcore patriarchal, male head of household, city, state, government units, xenophobia, they had a fear of strangers, fear of animals, etc. Very individualistic, selfish, I and me are important. Idea of war, violence, crime, and conquest. Pessimistic religious system, some hopelessness. When you understand that Christianity is a pessimistic religious system and it speaks to you individually, it doesn't talk. Christianity is all about saving your own soul. I'm blessed and highly favored, you know. African agricultural economy, farming, sedentary, matriarchal family, female head of household, countrywide government system. Not city, state, countrywide. Xenophilia. There is no fear of strangers or animals. We embrace people. That's why when people came to the shore, we didn't kill them on sight. We embraced them. And other human beings did the same thing. Only Caucasians, Europeans, felt that somebody coming there was an invader and that should be killed. Collectivism, family and community are important. Idea of peace, justice, and harmony. Optimistic religious system. In fact, Brother Brunette said, we were talking about spirituality. Says there in African religion, there is no such thing as a devil. We don't have a damn devil. Because it's all about the higher self. There is no battle. So when I read what I read, I make sure that I try my best to put in the right word, because the right word gives the correct connotation. It gives the correct meaning and definition. I know we've been saying slavery, and we've been saying black, and we've been saying race and race. I know we've been, but I'm trying my best to help us, because when you say these words, what image? If I said, close your eyes, and I'm going to say some words, and you tell me, whose face do you put on them? Black, welfare, drug addict, drug dealer, prostitute, gangster, thug. Being honest. And being honest, you put our face on that. But that's not who we are. But that's who we are in this society. These are the images. No fit fathers, no fit mothers. And then somebody said, I support Denzel, because Denzel said one of the main problems is fatherless homes. When we know the history, particularly of the welfare system coming out of the 60s, late 60s into the 70s, particularly 70s and 80s, it was a discouragement. If you wanted to get welfare, you couldn't have a man in your home. But then all the other divisions that have been perpetrated to destabilize the African family, the American African family. So the title of this piece is Post-Traumatic Captive Syndrome and Intergenerational Trauma. Captive is like a curse passing through the DNA of African people. Captivity is like a curse passing through the DNA of African people. This is presented by David Love. It was presented last year with the Atlanta Black Star. One of David Love is one of the staff members. The new reboot of the miniseries Roots reminds us of the physical toll that captivity has taken on African people. Captivity was an exploitative system that built global capitalism through the theft, kidnapping, and torture, imprisonment, and the prison labor of millions of Africans. However, that process is and continues to be an intergenerational one in which African people have suffered psychic damage. The experiences of the dreaded captivity ship dungeons of the Middle Passage, in which millions of souls still rest at the bottom. Okay. I got you, LaRue. You're on board. Let me run a little bit of this and you can make your comment, okay? The experiences of the dreaded captive ship's dungeons of the Middle Passage, in which millions of souls still rest at the bottom of the Atlantic. The auction blocks, the rapes, the whippings, and the lynchings, the captive patrols, the back-breaking and life-ending labor at gunpoint, the separation of families, all inflicted by psychological damage on the victims and their descendants. Through their trauma, though their trauma was profound, captive American African people have no mental health therapists available to them, no counselors to help them cope and heal, and the sickness was passed down to subsequent generations who, to this day, have not received the treatment they so desperately require and need. I know as a firefighter, being a very macho position, a very macho job, and even the women who perform it, although I love the fact that women came into the fire service because it chilled some of that ignorance that was happening within the firehouses. But still, it is a job when many men feel that, hey, I can see all of this and it doesn't affect me. But it does. To see whole families burned to death, see property loss, see people die before your eyes when you're doing EMS works, doing CPR or whatever. And so so I think my fifth year in or something to thereabouts, they started having counseling and the employees assistant program to debrief and defuse and talk about what you have seen and how you can cope with that. We've never had that. We have never had that. And even our psychologists and our psychiatrists still use it. I ain't talking about a Amos Wilson or a Naeem Akbar or Dr. Francis Cress Wilson. I'm talking about some of the Negroes who are well-trained and still practice it as if they were like Caucasians. To me, if I would go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and it ain't African, I have a problem. I have a problem. But if I'm steeped in this American idea, that ain't no problem because I believe I'm American. I believe just as American as any Caucasian. I know I ain't got the wealth, but I'm American anyway. Yeah, right. African people have post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. And of course, you can use Sister Joy DeGruy, post-traumatic slave syndrome. And they may not even know it. PTSD symptoms typically include intrusive thoughts about trauma, avoidance of thoughts or remembrance of trauma, anxiety, concerns about safety, feeling constantly on guard, fears of being judged because of the trauma, and depression. Individuals may also have flashbacks and feelings of disassociation. Very severe PTSD can result in a psychosis, and PTSD can be temporarily or permanently disabling. Dr. Monica Williams, clinical psychologist. Brothers and sisters, let me readjust myself here. Also, too, I want to go over what Dr. Amos Wilson, signs showing you may suffer from mental captivity. We're going to go over that as well. Individuals may also have flashbacks and feelings of dissociation. Very severe PTSD can result in psychosis, and PTSD can be temporarily or permanently disabling. Dr. Monica Williams, clinical psychologist and director of the University of Louisville Center for Mental Health Disparities, told Atlanta Black Star, according to Williams, who is also a professor in the Department of Psychology and Brain Science, writes Culturally Speaking blog at Psychology Today, PTSD has particularly significance in the American African community. Symptoms specific to cultural-based trauma in American Africans may include avoidance of Caucasians, fear and anxiety of the presence of law enforcement, paranoia and suspicion, and excessive worries about safety and family and friends. In a society in denial, racism is proclaimed dead and a historical phenomenon, yet it is very much alive, as manifested in the behavior of African people. In her book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing, Dr. Joy DeGruy discusses the condition that serves as a title of her book. Innocent and angry little boys threatened by a glance, proud parents reluctant to praise their children and feelings the needs of inhibited their natural exploratory instincts, friends not being able to celebrate the success of their peers, organizations torn asunder from within, and there's more. Parents feeling the need to protect their children from police. Issues of skin color and hair texture continue to dominate discussions regarding beauty and physical preference. The excessive forces on mental accumulation, people needing, wanting, and dreaming, yet fearing they will not succeed. Most of all, frustration. Frustration and anger, at times even rage, feeling that seems to be dominant many of our lives. If you're American African and living in America, none of this may be news to you. Dr. DeGruy argues that typically society does not address the role of history in producing these negative behaviors and perceptions. American Africans, she contends, adopted their behavior in order to survive the captivity process, an example of transgenerational adaptations associated with past traumas of captivity and ongoing oppression. I think there's too much emphasis placed on racist individuals as opposed to social forces that create racism. Anyone behaving slightly racist way has a much more deleterious effect on American African people than a few people being very racist, Dr. Williams said. Racism is built, which is really culturalism, because once again, there is no such thing as race, but it's European culture being imposed on African people. It's built into the power structures and institutions in the society. And Caucasian people are taught to propagate culturalism and not to see it. This process is maintained by pathological stereotypes and misinformation about American African people. Caucasian extremism is a reaction to feelings one society status threatened by the advancement of American Africans. And while Caucasians, while oppression has a psychological multi-generational impact on African people, it also leaves a biological and genetic imprint on its victims. In other words, research suggests that trauma is embedded in the DNA. Changing one's genetic makeup and becoming transferable to subsequent generations. According to the National Institutes of Health, chronic stress and exposure to stress hormones alter our DNA, not the gene sequence, but rather gene expression. When we're under stress, we produce steroid hormones called glucocorticoids. I gotta pronounce that word better, which affects various bodily systems. Past studies have shown that these glucocorticoids alter the genes that control the HPA axis, which includes the hypothalamus and pituitary glands of the brain and the adrenal glands near the kidneys. When the FKPB5 gene is modified, this leads to PTSD, depression, and mood disorders. Studies involving the descendants of European
so-called Jew Holocaust survivors under the Nazi Germany found that these individuals had altered their FKBP5 gene along with PTSD, hypertension, and obesity. A 2008 study in the National Academy of Science found that people who were permanently exposed to the Dutch famine of 1944-45 had altered IFG2 gene, which plays an important role in human growth. 60 years later, children of mothers who were pregnant during the famine developed a number of health problems such as obesity, diabetes, kidney damage, and heart disease. The implications for others intergenerationally traumatized groups who have endured genocide and racial oppression, such as indigenous people or so-called Native Americans, and American Africans, including the Hurricane Katrina survivors, are blatantly clear. When culturalism is understood not merely as a system of discrimination for a particular generation, but also as a curse that is passed through generations affecting our health like the DNA, this helps to shape the discussion of full extent of the damages created by racism or culturalism and the need for remedies and repair and recompense. Dr. Farad Lubin, associate professor in the Department of Neurology at the University of Birmingham, Alabama, Birmingham, told Atlanta Black Star that genetics is a matter of nature versus nurture. Nature is what you get from your parents, while nurture is how your environment shapes you as an individual, she said, noting that an individual might have a predisposition to developing a certain condition such as bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or suicide. Lubin's primary research is focused on investigating the molecular and genetic basis of learning, memory, and its disorders. You can experience stress early on in life, said Lubin, who is also a co-director of NIMS, Neuroscience Roadmaps Scholar Program, whose goal is to enhance engagement and retention of underrepresented graduate trainees in the neuroscience workforce. Your gene sequence changes as you age, and stress can distort that trajectory for the rest of your life, she noted, adding that there are different types of stress, such as acute, chronic, and moderate levels. And if you're exposed to chronic, unpredictable stress, that could have an impact on how you respond to your environment. Epigenetics serves as an interface between your environmental experiences and how your DNA will be interpreted in response to those experiences, Lubin stated. Sometimes these extremes destabilize you to your experience. In cases of extreme stress, you can have long-term effects. The Bible refers to generational curses and influences. And interestingly, nature actually supports what the Bible says, which is there is an effect on the molecular genetic information that is affected by stress that is transgenerational and passed down to the offspring. What are solutions? It is difficult because we are just beginning to understand these mechanisms and how they are triggered, according to Dr. Lubin, noting that all complexities involved in the science of trauma. Behavioral therapy, environmental enrichment has been shown to cure a number of disorders. Exposing yourself to new, novel things is good for you, but we didn't do enough of it. In animals and humans, we know enrichment helps to cure and alleviate disorders. The problem with enrichment and proper diet is that it takes more than just taking a pill. As science, I know that diet changes your genetics and how you deal with stress. It helps you deal effectively and appropriately to stress. It reduces cholesterol levels as you are not as fearful, cortisol levels. I think awareness first and foremost is important, Lubin added, noting that American African people are beginning to take matters into their own hands. American African society is embracing more of who they are. You see that with women wearing their natural hair. Lubin also noted that attitudes about culture are evolving among millennials, including American African young people. But that's not to say that they do not have some of the same residual effects of captivity. In addition, we can learn from those who are resilient and attempt to mimic which is present in resilient people in order to seek treatments for trauma. There is a resilient population and a susceptible population, whether they're disabled, have a background, has captives, suffered from the Holocaust. You can separate them into two groups. What makes the resilient, those who bounce back, and what makes the susceptible stay stuck? The genes that encode are different in resilient and susceptible groups. Interesting, these generational effects of trauma are not believed to last forever, according to Dr. Lubin. I believe it is a 6 to 7 generations within 25 years. Six or seven. Technically, we are beyond these numbers, but we are re-inoculated with Jim Crow and civil rights movements. I think we are, as a culture, need to make some major changes in the way that we think about harm caused by historical trauma. We know that it's not simply in the past, but we continue to influence descendants brought both socially and genetic mechanisms. Reparations need to be meaningful and not simply symbolic to have any real impact. Meanwhile, in the Black Lives Matter era, more attention is paid to the legacy of captivity and its significance in the present day. Police have been killing and abusing our people with impunity for centuries. And now, thanks to dash cameras, cell phone videos, and public outrage, Black Lives Matter, this problem is now getting the attention it deserves. These images can contribute to a sense of community, cultural trauma if nothing is done. But with continued attention, I think we can bring about change. These problems can go back to captivity, where force of law was used to intimidate captives, and then after the Civil War to exterminate and neutralize American African males. Finally, Dr. Lubin responds to those who say that African people should get over the trauma of captivity. It's a naive statement to say get over, but they don't even know what they're getting over. There are symptoms that they don't even know why they're there. It's hard to say to a Holocaust survivor, get over it. They're having the same generational effect from their experience as well. Just get over it. You know, we as African people, if we continue to be in this situation, it will only get worse. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, Brother LaRue is holding, so I'll talk with him and you. Also, too, we'll deal with a piece from Dr. Amos Wilson, which is 5 things showing signs that you may suffer from mental captivity. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
I am African, born in England.
I am African, born in Trinidad and Tobago.
I am African, born in the Gambia.
I'm African, born in Kenya.
I'm African, born in America. We are African.
Brothers, sisters, we are Africa's children, the motherland, our homeland, Africa, origin of life, home to great civilizations like those in ancient Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Africa's brilliance on blast in cities like Axum, in Timbuktu. Long ago, Africa's advances in agricultural production and her metallurgical and technological advances in the uses of metals like copper, gold, iron, helped her communities to flourish. Many came for her vast natural resources.
Diamonds.
Salt.
Cobalt.
Uranium.
silver,
petroleum,
cocoa beans,
bauxite,
tropical fruits, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters. Millions shipped to Brazil, Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, Virginia, Maryland, the U.S. coastal sea islands, across the Caribbean, New England.
Separated from her tribe, removed from his nation.
Ripped apart from mothers, fathers, sons, daughters,
and injected with the poisonous lies of their enslavers.
Force-fed a steady diet of inferiority, self-loathing, and shame.
Do you think that the South African government's racial policy is right?
I really do, because we cannot mix with the lower nations at the moment, unless they are cultivated and educated and so on.
We have internalized the lie that our African-born lives don't matter, the lie that has criminalized us as a people, the lie that has stripped us of our humanity.
I use that allerderm thing there, put it on my face.
That has left us with self-hate and hate for each other.
Xenophobia violence seems to be spreading among foreign nationals here.
So it's time to defy the lie and hold each other high. With pride and self-determination, defy the lie as we rebuild our great nation. Brothers, defy the lie and hold your sisters high. Sisters, defy the lie and hold your children high. Elders, defy the lie and hold our people high.
We are one!
So let's work together.
Learn together.
Heal together.
Thrive together.
Flourish together.
I am African, born in Baltimore.
Soy Gisela Arandia, soy afrodescendiente, nacida en Cuba.
Africano, pero nacido en Cuba.
I am African.
We are Africans.
Yeah.
intimacy, this one that is mystical sweetness. Folks, stick around as we watch him complete this thing he has done in you and in me. Cast your cares upon the sea of tranquility, which, by the way, you know he would never let you drown in. So why do we die on the beach when love abounds in ways untold? People watch their dreams unfold every day in the blink of an eye, sleight of hand. Trust me, y'all, when I say that God is the man who can and most definitely will rest your soul. Truth be told, let him have control. See, his eye is always on you, and still he keeps the sparrow. Even though life isn't easy, so think about the days when love was only fleeting. Think about the days before they had any meaning. Think about these things, what a difference you'll make. He don't need it, he'll love I am.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Mondays, Let's Buy Black 365 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People at 9 p.m. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday, later afternoon, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then Sunday again, Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., time for an awakening. I got my good brother and friend, Brother LaRue Holding. Brother LaRue, what's on your mind?
Sir, I was thinking about a word that was kind of left out. It's called the Stockholm Syndrome.
Ah, yes. You're right.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenon that has occurred just in human nature.
Right.
By captive peoples.
Right. And a piece on the Stockholm Syndrome is an emotional attachment to a captor formed by a hostage as a result of continuous stress, dependence, and a need to cooperate for their very survival. Probably the first heard that word Stockholm Syndrome was when Patty Hearst was kidnapped by the Black Symbionese Liberation Army. And then next thing you see her with a machine gun helping them rob a bank. And that's when they talked about the Stockholm Syndrome. Go ahead, brother.
The term was first recognized in Europe when these people went in and robbed this bank. And they had captives in the bank. And then the people, the captives started to try to defend the people who captured them. That was in a Stockholm, in Europe,
right.
In the Stockholm. And so that's how they came up with the Stockholm syndrome. When they but look, that syndrome was recognized hundreds of years before that.
Right.
Because in early history of the world, when people began to capture people, they understood that that's what was happening. Maybe they didn't coin a phrase for it, but they recognized that the people who were captured began to identify with their captors. And so the process of the Stockholm syndrome was recognized long before slavery.
But see, LaRue, if I capture you, the reason why you'll develop Stockholm syndrome is because when I capture you, I am imposing upon you the way I want things done, the way I say do, the way I want you to dress, what I want you to eat. All of these things are impacting you, you see. Now, if I just captured you, but yet there was still some freedoms that you might have, a way for you to escape and come, whatever, you know what I'm saying? You had some freedoms. Then you wouldn't develop the Stockholm syndrome, because what you would be doing is finding a way to be free for real, and more importantly, probably to eliminate me, because I had captured you and held you, you see.
It's a natural phenomenon. It's a natural phenomenon that is related to the survival instinct. A natural phenomenon related to the survival instinct. And so in order to survive, then
people tend to
identify with the people that captured them.
Right.
In John Mbidi's book, African Religion and Philosophy, he talks about spiritual possession. And spiritual possession is kind of like when one spirit possesses another spirit. So if we look at it from that angle, the Europeans began to impose their way of thinking, which is a spiritual thing, upon African people. And so then African people started to think like Europeans. We took on their values, their belief systems, their way of thinking. And so then when African people became spiritually possessed, which I write about in my book, in slavery, there was a cultural transplant where the African mind was removed and the European mind was imposed. And so there are certain phenomena that occur during spiritual possession where the people who are forced into it began to express certain types of behavior, like self-destruction, jumping into the fire, and doing things that were, it's kind of like when in nature, when the whales beach themselves, when they run into an environment that is not conducive to their growth and development. So then they enter into a self-destructive phase. And so those are the things that we kind of need to study and explore, the Stockholm syndrome and really spiritual possession, which is because of the African concept, it's being kind of kicked to the curb, but because of the way African thinking has been kicked to the curb, but after millions of years of evolution and cultural development, African people were very astute in understanding the laws of spirituality. So when they came up with the idea of spiritual possession, I think it was very valid based on many thousands of years of learning about what the spirit is, and we are spiritual people. And so I think that those are some things that we're in trying to come heal ourselves and overcome the oppression, that we have not taken into consideration the idea of spiritual possession and the Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, truly we haven't. Number one, because we have been so ingrained, so impacted, so imposed with the idea of European cultural thought that we can't seem to think outside of those imposed boundaries that they have placed upon us. And so we think our solutions lie within the framework of who and what they are.
Exactly.
You see? And so that's like I'm saying what I said earlier. To me, I could not think about going to a Caucasian if I have a psychological problem, social problem. I got to talk to a brother or sister hoping that even though they may be trained and educated and got their doctorates from whatever university within the system is, but they at least had an understanding who they are historically and culturally, i.e. a Dr. Naeem Akbar, a Dr. Wade Noble, Francis Cress Welsing, Dr. Amos Wilson, and so forth, that have an understanding of what's happened to me as an African person in this kind of society and will help me overcome the anxiety and all the other problems that I'm experiencing, and giving me a better framework and a better knowledge of what's coming at me, so I can defend myself. I can defend my heart, my mind, my physical well-being, and continue to move in the society.
Exactly. And what happens is that there are kind of like two areas of knowledge that might be opposing each other. And one is the knowledge that we get through education, and one is the knowledge that we get from our spirit. One is from the outside world, one is from the inside world. And so Africans who are educated in the European world, they use that information to try to analyze our problems. But then there are some Africans who are able to tap into their spirituality and understand overcome or counteract the knowledge that has been imposed upon us through the education world. The brainwashing, they call it, you might call it brainwashing. So sometimes our spirit can overcome our brainwashing.
We would hope so, but you understand that we've been made to look at African spirituality as primitive, as even demon worship and evil. I mean, when they talk about what happened in 1804 in Haiti with Bookman and Dessalines and Overture and so forth, they said that, in fact, the Christians say that the Africans made a pact with the devil. They made a pact with the devil to help liberate themselves. You know, I don't want to even get into the spiritual realm of it, because I understand that. What I understand about the Haitian Revolution in 1804, they've had enough, and they're going to throw off the yoke of the European oppressor, and we're going to fight them to the death. And that's what they did. And that's what they did.
They are being punished to this day.
Exactly. They are punished. They are being punished to this very day for being the first African group to gain independence. And so America, Britain, Spain, and France, in fact, the expansion of America is owed to what the brothers and sisters did in Haiti, because the French had to sell off what is called the Louisiana Purchase, the middle of the land. And if you look at an old map, you could see that it was a great swath of land that the French had in the midsection of this country. All land, of course, was stolen. You know, all land was theft. But they sold it to the United States because of French gaining its independence. But Haiti has been suffering ever since. They have been punished ever since.
But even though they're suffering in certain ways, there's a saying that says, what good does it do to gain the whole world and lose your soul? And the Haitian people were able to defend off this great world power because they tuned into their African heritage. And that's what allowed them to be as successful, at least in that way. If African American or Black American African people, if we're going to do that, then we kind of have to study what the Haitian people did and implement that in our daily lives. So we talk about freedom and being free and getting free, but as long as we cling to this European mental construct, we will never be free, because that's what slavery was about, taking out the African mind and putting in the European mind.
That's right. That's right. And that's why on this program, brother, I deal with it, because it's all about the African mind, and not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. And I end this program, as you know, with the words of Stephen Biko: the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. Dr. Carter G. Woodson said, if you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. If you render him an outcast, he'll be an outcast. When you send him to the back door, even when there is no back door, he'll want one.
You know what else he said? That African, Black African people who are educated by the European are a hopeless liability to the race.
That's right.
Because that's how they're going to act according to their education.
That's right.
But what I would suggest, though, is at least as an introductory to us regaining our African mind, is the reading of African Religion and Philosophy by John M. Beatty. Because we don't have a whole lot of sources that can show us how African people thought before we were captured by the Europeans in colonialism and in slavery. And so M. Beatty, man, I think he did, even though he's coming from a European education perspective, that he did as best that he could to show how African people think. And once we understand that, then we will begin to take the first steps towards freedom. Because I like to use the example of the lion being captured and put in a zoo. And then they said, well, we're going to set the lion free. So then they let the lion go, put him back in his environment. But look, he does not know how to be a lion anymore. So in order for us to be free, we have to learn what it means to be African. And I think Mbini kind of gives us a idea, at least, of how African people think. When we start thinking like African people, then that's where our true freedom lies.
I agree. That's why it's important to reclaim and recapture and restore the African mind. Dr. Bruce Bridges, in his book, Reclaiming the African Mind, Recapturing the African Mind, and all the other books, DVDs, videos, whatever it is that will help you, give you the perspective and help you get the understanding of who you are historically and culturally, and to purge yourself of all that ignorance and all that self-doubt, and more importantly, to look at each other in a better situation instead of with disdain and disgust, as so many of us do, as we blame ourselves. We blame ourselves as opposed to the Caucasian for this condition we're in. Yes, I understand. They are the ones that did it. But we must be the ones that get ourselves out of it. That is our responsibility. Exactly. We cannot change them. It's our responsibility. And that's why that's why the work of our scholars, our historians, our researchers is so vitally important. And that's why we must embrace them.
If we're not talking about how to understand how we used to think in our belief system and our cultures before the European invasion, then we're really not really
I'm sorry, what'd you say, LaRue? Go ahead. LaRue, go ahead.
Right now, we don't understand. I mean, we have the African spirit still as a people, but we don't have the African thought process. We don't have the African, we don't understand the African cultures, which there were many, many different versions of African culture. And so I think that once we began to understand African culture in general, then if we could take that African thought, the African mind, and apply it to our situation, we will be so successful, it wouldn't even be funny. But that's what the oppressors don't want us to do, and that because we're still in slavery.
Right.
They don't want us to understand how African people perceive the world, perceive nature, perceive God. And right now, we're looking at it from the European perspective, which benefits Europeans.
Exactly. All right. We have another caller. Just hold on, Brother LaRue. We have another caller. Go ahead. 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie, this is Brother Marcos.
Hey, Brother Marcos. How are you today, brother?
I'm doing all right, good brother.
Good.
You know, you are so correct. You know, slavery was not the destruction of the body, but of the mind. And that the psychological effect that slavery had on the mind of black people has never been corrected or addressed. So you're right, we're dealing with all this trauma. And I doubt we're going to solve it in this environment that we're in. Because this is a nut house. This place is designed to drive you crazy.
Yes, it
you
is.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it is.
And we are lucky to have our sanity in this nut house. We are lucky because this European, he's thorough, you know. He's thorough in his program. I mean, even the language we speak, you know. I mean, we are two Africans. Our physiognomy, we are Africans. But we speak in English.
Right.
We speak in the language of the colonizer. And, you know, when I was growing up in Jamaica, you know, we have a English dialect we call Patois, right? It's
right.
A broken form of English. And they would ridicule you. Your own people would ridicule you. Say, look, you don't have no intelligence. You only speak. You speak Patois, you know, because you don't have a good command of the colonizer's language. So your intelligence is based on how well you command the colonizer's language. And this happens with French, it happens with Spaniards, happens with Portuguese, you know, and the black people who speak the language, some of them have more allegiance to those country and to their African self, you know?
And you know, Marcus, because of that, well, Wednesday's guest is going to be Damani Aquil, and we're going to talk about the language classes that he's offering, aside from French, and I believe a Spanish. There's also an African language he's offering, so we can begin to communicate with our people. So, you know, if I go to Jamaica, it is not going to be very hard for me to communicate with Jamaican brothers and sisters. No, I may not speak Patois, and I understand that, but at least they speak English, just like in Ghana or Nigeria. But if you go to Senegal or Cote d'Ivoire, it's going to be a different story if you don't have any understanding of French. So the whole idea is to learn to speak to our people, but you are right. In fact, in the ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, great work, a plenary work. There's a chapter in there that says, "Can you liberate yourself in somebody else's language?" This is not our language, and that's a very good question, because that's why, Brother Marcus, I try to present the wording as I'm talking to us, that will be different because we need wording that gives images and courage and positiveness to us as a people. I don't use the word slave because, number one, we were not slaves. We were captives. I don't use the word race because there's no such thing as race. It's cultures, you know. So I try to infuse those particular things in it because that gives you a framework and it gives you an idea. Because when I say captive, that means somebody came and captured you and took you against your will. But if I say slave, that connotation is different than captive. You see?
Yeah, I mean, you give up. Yeah,
exactly.
Gave up. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You know.
So we
need to understand that the language that we are in is not our language, and we need to make sure that when we speak, we are truly speaking to give an idea and a concept and an image that is positive of African people. You see?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
One of my great teachers was the late Dr. Amos Wilson, because, you know, as a black psychologist, he dealt with this, the psychological problem that we have. He didn't play with it. He laid it down, you know, just as the way it is. And as you said, you know, you talk about, they said, people say crime doesn't pay, but that's a lie. Crime does pay, you see, because all those lawyers and judges and they make money
all
from
those,
the
all
crime
those prisons,
that people commit.
They were concerned about the private prisons in this country. Some private prisons told states that if you don't have a certain percentage, a high percentage, maybe 80, 95%, capacity, then we're going to charge the state when they drop below a certain percentage of attendance. Yeah. That's why some judges were giving people time, you know, ridiculously for very minor offenses because they needed those individuals to be in those prisons. And then, of course, some of those prisons were making products. They were selling, they were making products and goods and services and so in the prison. So they needed those individuals in there to make that money, you see.
Yep. The whole society is a prison.
Yeah.
The entire society is a prison because the educational system is controlled by Europeans. The penal system, as you say, the doctor, the medical system.
Yes.
You go to the doctor, the doctor tell you, oh, you know what, you need major operation because he make money from the insurance, from the Medicaid. You know, naturally, we don't have no protection because the police police protect it.
And then in this society, big pharmacy, the big pharma, the pharmaceutical companies reign, and they don't want to cure nobody. This system's not about cure; it's about treatment.
It's about treatment. Yeah, and selling that medicine. It's a diabolical system.
Oh, it's an evil system, man. I'm telling you, this what we live in, Brother Marcus, is a very evil and corrupt system, and it's global. European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon, and has had deleterious effects on all of humanity. You know, and I will try my best to call it out for what it is and what it has done. I have no love for the. I can't stand the damn British. I'm tired of seeing on TV, they always play up the British, they always play up the Queen and the little kids and all that old bull. The amount of evil that the British has done almost supersedes the Spanish and the French.
My brother,
it does supersede them. You
even
know,
in my little country, Jamaica, right now, they have so much black on black, so much. You know, just violence, young black youth, just boom, 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 boom. Last year we had 1,600 murders. You know, so
1,600.
I think the people outside of America, the black folks outside of America, are more. You know, I think they, you know, have a more of a psychological issue than the black people here, you know, in America. You know, because you see the black people here in America, you know who the enemy is.
Well, let me just say this. Let me say this, Brother Marcus. Some of us understand and who know what the who the enemy is. But there's a lot of us think the enemy is ourselves, just like we always say we're our own worst enemy. I hate when we say that. I mean, I hate it. We're our own worst enemy. If you want to just break that down, number one, an enemy is some entity or person that operates against your best interests. That's what an enemy is. You know, and truly, Europeans have shown to be an open and sworn enemy to us. But now when we say we're our worst enemy, what do you mean? We're worse to ourselves than what the Caucasian has been to us? Not understanding the reason why we act the way we do is because of them. So damn it, they're our worst enemy. They are the ones that have sold the Caesar discourse. They are the ones that put this into our minds. They are the ones that did this. You know?
Yeah, they're behind the scene. And that's why you see, and that's what happened in my country, because down there, you don't really have white folks coming out front doing things, you know? But they operate behind the scenes with the black flunkies.
Yes.
You see, they have the black flunkies. So you can't see the European, you know? So you're going to see your own people doing it. Oh, you know? So when you come out and say, oh, it's a white man. Oh, no, man, it ain't a white man. It's you. You see, because the white man behind the scene.
That's
you know?
Right.
So
the hidden hand.
You got a lot of work to do.
That's right. The root cause of the problem. All right. Thank you, Brother Marcus. I appreciate
All
you,
right,
dear brother.
Thank you. Thank
All right. Continue to listen. I'm going to talk about Amos Wilson right now. Okay?
All right, brother.
All right, brother. In my consistent and constant effort to educate ourselves, to come to understanding of who we are. And brother, let me say this. I don't give you my opinion. I'm not giving you Oshie's perspective. What I'm giving you is based on the scholarly research by our scholars and historians, elders and ancestors, men and women who sometimes without any money at all, no foundation money, no grant money, none of that, went about to reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people. This Friday will be the first day, the second day, of course, of February, but the first day on this program dealing with our history. And we'll talk about the importance of embracing who we are historically. We'll talk about Dr. Carter G. Woodson and what he was about. We need to listen to our scholars, our historians, and read them. Go to YouTube and listen and watch them. Put them on a DVD and listen to them while you're in your car. We need to do that. Dr. Amos Wilson said, these are the signs. These are the signs. Five signs showing you may suffer from mental captivity. Of course, he said mental slavery, but it's captivity because we have been captured and we've been given a mindset. Number one, what language do you speak? Language is critical to the expression of culture. It's a means by which the values, beliefs, and customs of a people are communicated. When African people were forced to adopt Euro languages, we were forced to abandon our own worldview and accept a foreign world. The words that we have give you, that's why I'm saying, that's why I'm always trying to instill different words as opposed to the words that you usually hear in the society. Because the words you usually hear in the society are intended by intent to give you an impression and an image that is not us, that is not you, brothers and sisters. What name do you answer to? We were stripped of our names from our homeland. This loss destroyed the link that tied our people of Africa descent to their heritage and their history. Some Africans shared Euro names, but most still answer to names that designate us as property. What kind of food do you eat? Enslaved or captured Africans lived their day-to-day lives in desperation and in hunger. Comfort was sought in what became known as soul food. While the Caucasian ate the best parts of the meat, Africans were relegated to eating all the other parts, feet, skin, intestines, tail. And today, American African people still partake of this type of comfort food, even though it has been proven to be unhealthy for us. High blood pressure, diabetes. Number four, what God do you pray to? Captive African people were forced to abandon their spiritual belief systems, just as Brother LaRue was talking about, and to adopt the Euro version of Christianity. Africans have their own religion and concepts of God, which many in the African diaspora rejected as a result of anti-African conditioning by Caucasians. One of the most egregious acts was the formation of the white man as a Caucasian, the European, as a son of God. This belief implies that the Caucasian is perfect and good and supreme and the only source of blessings. Number five, what kind of clothes do you wear? Fashion has always placed an important role in African culture. The styles and the patterns of clothing often held cultural significance. Under captivity, Africans were not allowed to wear their traditional garments. Even today, African people have retained a fondness for elaborate fashions. But for many of us, traditional African clothing is strange and undesirable. In addition, we are loyal to clothing brands originating from outside our community. Yes, we love European brands. Wear them on it, just like advertisement. The European. We want what they got. Join us right here. You can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. As you can see, as Dr. Emmis Wilson said, ask them pointed questions. The language, your name, the food we eat, the God we pray to, the clothes we wear, all these things are cultural. They're cultural. The problem is that we've been made to feel ashamed of African cultural traditions and concepts. We've been made to feel it is less than. This European has done a hell of a job on our psyche, on our minds, to the point that we blame each other for this. When we see some of us who feel we should act and behave in certain ways, but we don't, we blame ourselves, not understanding the depths of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege that is global, that has caused an effect on the planet, where many people to this very day, as I'm speaking, is putting a bleaching cream on their skin to lighten up their skin. Many people who have the wherewithal, the money, to change the shape of their nose, or even to get the melanin out of their skin. See, if you have real money, see, that's why, you know, I said that, well, if Michael Jackson did have vitiligo, and I don't know, he could have, with the amount of money he had, maintained the color of his skin. If he did have vitiligo, I'm quite sure you've seen, you know, people with vitiligo, and you see how they, how their skin begins to, the pigment is lost in stages over periods of time. Well, if you got money, that's a surgical procedure. They could put the pigment back in your skin, just like they could take it out. Just like they can make a man a woman or a woman a man. The science of today is so much deeper. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised at anything that they're able to do to a human being in today's world with today's science. I wouldn't be surprised if they've cloned a human being already. Because you know they've cloned animals. They've cloned animals, what, 10, 15, 20 years maybe. So cloning a human being, what I'm saying, dear brothers and sisters, and my passion plea to us as African people is to adopt our way, is to believe in who we are, is to embrace who we are as a cultural, historical people. I know there's a lot of us can't conceive of giving up the privileges that we think that we have here. The modernization, the creature comforts. When we consider all that has been happening to us, when you consider all of the negative things internally and externally, then you should understand why we need to embrace who we are as African people for our very lives, for the future of us as a people. Because European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a death sentence to people outside of that. Is a death sentence to people who have melanin. Is a death sentence to people who have resources that they want. It's a death sentence. There is no way that we can match the military of the European. It's no way. Last night on the program, something was said that it seemed like that had we been able to maintain a certain situation. In fact, the brother used what was going to happen in Mississippi. And he used Dr. King as saying that, you know, because Dr. King did have a gun, Dr. King was perfectly willing to protect his family and his home. He used the tactic of nonviolent social change because he knew that we didn't have the armament to stand up and fight a physical fight against the Caucasian. And, of course, one-on-one in a physical fight, we beat their butt every time. Has witnessed the many physical boxing champions, karate, whatever. Physically, we do it every time. But what he said was that we could have taken Mississippi. I just want to make this perfectly clear. There is no place in this country that we as African people can take and to say that we can be sovereign in. There is not one place. In fact, when you look at what we did coming out of captivity and coming together to build, the jealousy and envy and hatefulness and mean-spiritedness of the cracker killed those communities, killed Rosewood, killed Tulsa, killed Elaine, Arkansas, killed Allentown, killed all of them. Race riots and disturbances here in Atlanta, St. Louis, and so forth. So, no. We got a caller. Let me take this caller.
Hey.
Hey, good afternoon.
I know you're getting ready to get off, but I just wanted to throw this out to you right quick because I didn't really get a chance to listen to the show to see if you spoke about this. You know, this little Baba Louie last night on the Grammys said that the Dreamers built this country. I'm wondering, has there been any
wait a minute, fight back on that nonsense? Wait a minute, really?
Yes, said, man. The Dreamers built this little country. Puerto Rican Baba Louie got on there and talked about the Dreamers built this country, and it's our dream to support the Dreamers. Let me go on record. I don't give a F about them Dreamers. I hope they get rid of all of them. Them Baba Louis have no respect for us whatsoever.
No.
And this is why, just like you've been talking about, we are second-class citizens in this country that we built. They didn't build nothing.
No.
Their mama and daddy left from where they was, where America oppressed their people, colonized their people, and came here, and now they want to try and do the same thing to the indigenous Africans like me and yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is crazy, man. You need to really, really check this out, and when you get back on the air on Wednesday, address and deal with it. Yes, she said the Dreamers built this country. So you saying while I was enslaved and my mother and sisters were being raped and brutalized. Also, my brothers and fathers was being raped and mutilized by this damn Caucasoid Yorugu devil. We were dreaming and accepting it and looking for what? I was dreaming, if anything, to kill them and to go back home.
Yep.
That's what I was dreaming about.
I know that's
what
right.
What the hell am I dreaming about building this that's been nothing but a nightmare for my people? Oh, man, we got to fight back against these people.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I had to call so late, but I was in the middle of handling some real serious business. But I had to drop that on you before you got off the air. So hopefully you could do a little bit more research on it. And, you know, you could address it and deal with it on Wednesday. Because let me tell you something. That Baba Louie is no friend of African people.
No.
Don't let nobody fool you. And you know, some of them understand and know they Africans, but they always try to play that card, especially those light skinned that look like that Yorugu.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They feel they honorary Yorugus. You know what I mean? And they come after us, and they'll hurt us at the drop of the dime.
That's right.
You know what I mean? But I got to run, brother. But please, I hope you get more information on it and you address it on Wednesday, because that's absolutely sickening. For that no good, filthy Baba Louie.
Well, I got to find it. I got to research it because
you'll find it. Yeah. You know what I mean? You'll find it.
Well, it ain't even hard to find. Well, I hope somebody, just like you said, put a check on it and did comment on it, you know, because that's BS. But the bottom line is that issue is out in the forefront with the DACA piece, the Dreamers, all that little kind of stuff. And the reality is that the so-called Spanish influence on those people, they embrace their Spanish, not their African. They despise their African. Whether you're in Cuba, Puerto Rico, Mexico, wherever. Once again, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is the idea that is desired.
And listen, Oshi, I'll leave you on this note. Like you said, they think they honorary Yorugu because of that Spanishism in it. But the bottom line is the Yorugu in that Spanish is the enemy of African people because all they ever trying to do is exploit us. And all they ever do is try to use us. But I got a role, baby. Talk to you Wednesday.
Jay, thank you. Hotep, my brother. Thanks a lot, Jay. Appreciate you. Appreciate you for calling. Appreciate you listening. Oh, he's definitely on point. I didn't watch the Grammys. In fact, when I did channel surf and came upon it, it was towards the end of it. And when they were talking about those who had passed on, I seen that part. And then I think I did something else. I didn't see the ending. I didn't even know who was. Well, I watched news this morning. They told me who the record of the year was. I think Bruno Mars. And, of course, there were some issues about Bruno Mars and appropriation, you know. But, I mean, he's Puerto Rican. And, of course, he has embraced his African Puerto Rican, just like some of the Puerto Rican women who have light skin but an African body, if you know what I mean. Parao, you know. That's how they got it, J-Lo, you know. It's that African side that you don't want to deal with. And it's the same. I mean, I never forget talking with a Puerto Rican sister who, and I could sense in her the feeling that because she was kind of dissed by her family because she was dark-skinned and she had a fro. When I talked to this sister, I'm light-skinned. So that's why I don't have any issue about that. I'm just like what Malcolm said. I hate the rapist blood that's in me. I don't give a damn because I understand being African spans the spectrum of human coloration, if you want to use that term, of light, bright, damn near white to blue black. I understand it, and I embrace every bit of it. I love all of it as an African. But there are many of us who hate the fact that we were born without having that privilege, without having that idea that this will somehow afford me a better chance because I'm not too dark. We have lots of work to do. I'm going to check that out, what the brother said, what Jay has said about that. But this Wednesday, I'm going to have Brother Amani Aquil, and we were talking about that and repatriation and going back to the continent, investing and so forth that he's been doing. The other brother I presented to you a week or so ago, Brother Bomani, a few weeks ago, rather, Brother Bomani, and what he's doing. So, you know, I'm just not just talking about it. I'm just trying to make sure that we understand what we should be doing. And if you don't want to go, you don't have to. You could stay here. Just be supportive, honestly, seriously. Seriously. By that I mean, you know, your allegiance. All of our allegiance should be with us as a people. All of it. Considering what has happened to us, but I know what has happened to us psychologically, and it's not going to be with us. I do know that. So to me, either you're going to be in or you're going to be out. Bottom line, either you're going to be with us or you're going to be on the outside. Make your choice. And once you're outside, you are out. It's over. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, committed to helping to free the African mind, to reclaim, recapture, restore the African mind. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. See you on Wednesday, brothers and sisters. Have a blessed day. Peace.